Welcome to Dispatch in Depth, where we give you the stories behind the science of emergency dispatch. This is the official research podcast of the International Academies of Emergency Dispatch, the world's leading authority in dispatch science. I'm your host, Isabel Gardette, Director of Academics for the International Academies of Emergency Dispatch. In each episode, we'll be bringing you stories of the fascinating people who do research in this area. We'll give you their backstory, including how they got there, what they're working on, and what drew them to the research. These are people who represent the cutting edge in dispatch research, and I hope you'll join us to hear more about them. Welcome to Dispatch in Depth. Today's guest has been in the field of emergency medical services and emergency dispatch since 1994. For almost 20 years, he has worked with the Academy as an instructor, implementer, and reviewer, and he is also a member of the Medical Council of Standards Readers Group and the Council of Research. For the last 15 years, he has worked for NOTRF NOE Emergency Call and Communication Center, an ACE-accredited center in Austria, and he is currently working on a study to investigate better ways to serve callers with psychosocial needs and behavioral problems. Welcome, Heinz Novosad.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Before we get started, could you tell our listeners a little bit about your background? How did you get into emergency services and what drew you to this field?
Yes, that's quite a simple story. Originally, I do have a commercial academy graduation, which is absolutely not in that field. But in 1994, it's a friend of mine which told me, are you not interested in voluntary EMS? And I thought, I have no idea, but yeah, sounds interesting that I did it and I started. And from that time on, I tried to learn. So first years, it was, you need to know, Austrian system is very voluntary driven. So I tried to do every possible training stage. And from the very first beginning, this includes as well teaching EMS personnel. And, of course, getting involved in emergency communication. So 1994, 1995, I started this business. From the very first beginning, I was really fascinated about the challenges and the very specific opportunities in the invisible field, so invisible sphere of actions, as I always tell it, in healthcare, which is, for me, emergency communication.
So why do you call it the invisible sphere of actions? That's interesting.
Yeah, because we just have our ears and the voices or some noises on the field to interrogate the caller or to get the information what's happening on field.
So that's what was interesting to you about emergency communication specifically as opposed to just EMS in general.
Right, right. So I know both sides and the very specific challenges and the specific opportunities in these, as I told, an invisible sphere, are so specific, so interesting for me that I always was fascinated about that.
And for our listeners in the U.S., can you just give us a little bit of background on how does the Austrian system differ from U.S. system and what is the outline or the organization of your communication center?
Yeah, the EMS itself is, as I said before, very voluntary driven. So most of the EMS is done by organizations like Red Cross, Samaritan, and the same with the PSAPs. The call centers are most of the time get reorganized last years into bigger ones, sometimes statewide, depends on the discipline, if it is EMS or fire or police. The most important difference to the US is that this is a doctors-driven systems, which means there are this is not a system like yours working with paramedics. So it's driven by doctors. The EMS is assistance to the doctor system.
So doctors actually ride on the ambulances?
Right. The specific units, which is where doctors on board, and as well for the helicopters.
And in the communications center, are those medical professionals or do you have civilian emergency medical dispatchers?
Depends on where it is, in which state. Most of the times it's accounts or some kind of they are voluntary driving the EMS and working for the comm center as well. That's the way I did it 15 years ago or nearly 20 years ago. I did it on both sides. So it's more mixed and that's a big issue or a big difference to the US too.
I believe that the health system there is very different too. Do you have a statewide health system?
Yes, we do. Yes.
Okay, so that would change the, at least the jurisdictional or the way that you respond to emergencies, the way people pay for their services, that kind of thing.
Right, right. That's statewide the same, or countrywide the same. The response configuration or the decision-making process is different normally on a statewide level in EMS.
Okay. So recently you've been working on a study to identify better ways to work with or to serve callers who have psychosocial or behavioral problems, including drug problems or other issues that might be better served by community resources than by emergency or acute care. What got you interested in that topic originally?
Yeah, it's two things which made me interested, very specific in that. It's, of course, my scientific social science background and my long-term experience in EMS. There is another one which should be counted as well, and this is the mission statement of the AED, which tells us, I'll allow to read it, to advance and support the public safety emergency telecommunication professional and ensure the citizens in need of emergency health and social service are matched safely, quickly, and effectively with the most appropriate resource. And these statement, my social science background, and of course my own experience on EMS made me very interested in that topic.
You mentioned your social science background. Do you have a degree in social sciences?
Yes, this was done because of my current interest and curiosity in learning more. There was some steady listening on my inner voice, which makes me motivating graduating from the University of Vienna in Bergotz first, and then at the University of Applied Science in St. Pölten, the social science. This was done within the last years. It was beside of my profession work in the EMS, in the PSEP, sorry.
Is your field social science generally, or do you have a particular special area that you're interested in?
It's the education I did is more generally. But this makes me, this is the right direction because it's more driven by interdisciplinarity, mm-hmm. by strategic planning, by working together with other disciplines.
That's great because in so many fields you see those sort of silos of information, but you're talking about bringing together a lot of different people with different backgrounds to do studies that have a little bit more relevance, generalizability.
You're absolutely right, yes.
So for this study, what was the research question? What were the objectives of the study?
First of all, I'll tell you what our hypothesis was before we started.
Okay.
Beside of my motivation, my personal motivation, there is strong evidence in theory and practice. That's what I told. As well, daily reporting in medias about the status quo, this research was motivated. From my experience, it's so many times EDs or responders experience frustrating challenges causing this service, like poor housing or living conditions, as you said before, behavioral problems, alcohol, drug problems, repeated calls for help, etc., etc. So at the beginning, we have these three hypotheses. One of these is, in practice, emergency communication centers faces calls for help, which is explicit or maybe hidden together with a psychosocial background. This is the first one. The second hypothesis we started this study was the treatment of these calls is based on the logic of actions of our particular professions. So this is depending on what we are coming from. Is it police, fire, medical, or even another one, or maybe a nurse line. The third one is that the situation awareness in our emergency communication centers normally doesn't result in an intensified cooperation with other healthcare professionals like social science or social work.
That's interesting that you're talking about that the psychosocial issues that emergency dispatchers experience or encounter could be either explicit or hidden. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What is a hidden psychosocial issue?
What we found out is because we also looked into the motivation of certain participants as well, the callers themselves. And so they are waiting an early relief of pressure in decision making. That's what we found. Hmm. So, and the reason is, and that's the reason why sometimes they hide the true problem behind maybe a more medical sound problem description, you know?
So they might report an acute medical problem because they want something to be done for them, whatever it is, right away, rather than sort of getting into the system and taking a longer time to resolve maybe the underlying issue.
Most of the time it's just education in how they are being socialized. And to getting help needs in many cultures of the world, you need to be in medical troubles.
Yeah, in order to access services, you have to have a specific definable problem.
Right.
So what did you do? What was your methodology? How did you approach this problem?
So it was, we did the study in between 2015 and 2017. It was a 2-year-long empirical social research project. We investigated emergency calls with psychosocial backgrounds, which are addressed to the Emergency Communication Center. We are a group, so me and my colleagues performed a reconstructive approach to explore one's causal mechanism while handling such calls. We used genuine audio files. We used the data from the Emergency Communication Center. And of course, we are looking into best practice models by always respecting the participants' view. This was the data stuff. So the data was assessed applying a qualitative content analysis. And the aim of these 2 years' research was to design and develop more sustainable solutions or even concepts in emergency communication centers based on an interdisciplinarity approach. So that means, to focus it, emergency communication centers supported by social work. Or maybe, if this is necessary, the referral to the profession of social work.
It sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you did audio review, that you reviewed calls. But did you also conduct interviews or talk to either the callers or the dispatchers?
Yes, we did this too. Audio files was one approach to get enough data to research that. We also did interviews with call takers to get their view. And as well to a bunch of people, which are the callers, which were most the callers.
I love this idea that you would do research specifically for the purpose of better serving callers or better serving the system overall to make that operationally valuable rather than just doing the research and kind of saying, oh, now we found out an answer. What specific problem were you trying to solve? And then what made you choose a partnership with social services? What's the benefit there for the callers?
Yeah, the benefit for the callers, and not just for the callers, as well for the systems, is that this is a chance to build more awareness and maybe about changing paradigms through patient guidance and case management, because human problems don't ask for responsibility. That was what we found out. It's not about the number which is called or about the police or medical or the profession which is behind the number. It's more the human problem which is should be in the focus. This is a chance to build more awareness for some kind of integrated care, beginning at the first call for help, which is most of the time, of course, a PSAP anywhere in the world.
I like that you said that the human side of the problem should be the focus. And it sounds like you have a really strong commitment to qualitative research, to the social sciences, whereas a lot of the studies that have been done in EMS have been very quantitative. They've been time-driven. What's the argument for social science or qualitative research in emergency services?
The argument is that there is a big difference in understanding social problem situations from explaining medical symptoms. You know, this is covering the application of diverse methodology or professional knowledge. So bringing social science in, and of course, quality research means more the understanding of the social backgrounds of the calls for help. So solving the cause or handling the cause and not just the symptoms.
So the qualitative approach allows you to look at the underlying reason for a particular problem, whereas the numbers, they're important because they kind of point out that there might be a problem. But then in order to understand why it's happening, you're saying the qualitative research lets you get into that depth.
Right.
So given that, what did you find from the study? What did you find out about these callers with psychosocial issues or from the dispatcher's perspective?
So the one thing is that even also a wide range of different helplines or non-emergency lines has been established globally, or education efforts, information campaigns as well was provided globally. The people consistent call 911 or 112. And we asked, why is that? Even if we do a lot of different things to avoid that.
We find the same thing here.
Yeah, I think it's a global thing. That's really a global thing. It's infected by the systems which are used somewhere in the world. And it's, of course, a cultural thing as well. But one maybe global explanation is that, many others could be affected too. The so-called consumer confusion experiment states that a wide range of possible selection results in confusion and restraint. In terms of if you go to the on a market and you have 10 different kinds of milk, maybe it's not easier to decide in between this or that. It makes it harder to decide. And the same time is in very developed systems, which is having a lot of different numbers for psychosocial or behavioral or alcohol or different other problems.
That is fascinating. I hadn't thought of the choice problem as relevant to EMS, but the more options you give people, the more they sort of fall back on their known source, their known resource, which is for us 911 and whatever emergency number they have. That's a very interesting concept to apply to emergency services or really even to government services generally, that the more options someone has to access service, maybe the more likely they are to choose what they know.
Yeah, the thing is to change the view. From our perspective, of course, as EDs or working for a comm center, as you said it before, it's 911 or in our case 112 or 144. But from the perspective, with the eyes of the person who is in need for help, it's not that logical. Is it a case for 911? Is it a case for this or that? It's a decision-making process, which, according to that experiment leads to, okay, let's take the 911.
That actually ties in with an initiative the Academy has been very committed to, which is changing the perception of emergency services or emergency communications that 911 or 112 or whatever the number is only for emergencies. Our perspective is that there's a trained dispatcher, a trained emergency dispatcher on the other end of the line who can help with that decision. Why not make the emergency number more of an access point for different kinds of care, for a wider range of care? And it sounds like that's something that you are tackling with this project as well. It sounds like you're trying to make the emergency number an access point for other community services. Is that correct?
That's absolutely that what we are looking for. So because we are, I said it before, the awareness of some kind of integrated care begins with the first calls of help. It's kind of a gatekeeping, kind of we need to maybe be prepared for not just the medical problem, the police or the fire intended call, maybe it's that thing what we normally name as low acuity call. It's more social care. It's more the point to other professions.
And then what actual partnerships have you built or are you planning to build on the basis of this study? And how did you go about doing that? How do you build partnerships with the other agencies in your community?
What you meant is partnership with other professions, of course.
Right, like social work, yeah.
Okay. Maybe that's one of the problems starting bringing such an idea into practice, because let me use the term the world in between these two different professions is really another one. That means how their methodology, how they work, how they think, how they term the humans, client versus patient, something like that. and many, many more things are absolutely different. So, and that's kind of our third hypothesis, that because we are not thinking in that perspective, in that mindset, it's really hard to interconnect with social organizations. But we tried to make some kind of interest follow-up studies which show especially this problem. There is ongoing research followed by our project which try to better this interdisciplinary approach and as well the referrals in terms of interaction, in terms of knowing each other. So there is one project which covers social work methodology in case of frequent callers. So how could and which way does it need to go to bring the social work into the comm center or to interconnect or to work together on a case in a case with a frequent caller? And the other one is, and this is very specific, we are also having a research project on digital social referral, which brings together those referral aspect, which is another one. Social organizations are not comparable to a paramedic unit or something like that. And we also focus on the old days technology solutions, digitalization. So having a map like maps in your CAD systems, knowing what kind of social services do I have in my community? Who can I call at which time? How do they work? Are they going to the patient? Is it necessary that the patients or the clients came to the service? And so many, many questions more.
So having just even a directory of services or a map of services that they can connect callers to, it sounds like a very logical first step, at least to offer something to the caller other than either an ambulance or this isn't really an emergency call.
This could be both. Our intention is to develop a system which shows this information as well for possible callers, for the population. And this should be easy and not in the terms of EMS or the terms of the profession of social science, because that's not the same speech. And of course, for professional users like EDs in PSEPs, working in PSEPs.
What work have you done around maybe talking to all of these different communities, talking to all these different professions? How much work do you think needs to be done to convince all of the different groups to work together? How do you do that?
From our point of view, this starts at the bottom line in terms on the practice side. There are some best practice examples which we found. They are working especially that way, starting at the practice, at the community-based level, on the bottom line. Talking about the cases all together, having kind of case management in place and bring the guys together, not just on the scientific way, which is absolutely important, but as well on the case-based level.
Bring them together around specific cases.
Right. Otherwise, what we found is in listening and interviewing, of course, listening to the calls and interviewing our EDs, was that the EDs mentioned their social problem. So they heard that, and that's kind of the solution we proposed. And we are pretty sure that this is the same on the social worker side. So there is a kind of feeling for this is a different call to the others. This doesn't match the normal, let me tell it, normal emergency call with any medical symptoms in behind. We call these extract listening in terms of a very specific method to flag symptoms, different problem markers. And that's the starting point. Not to allow per se or from the very first day having maybe a social science triage done by an ED, because that's a very professional and of course very hard and different thing. But extract listening means to be aware of these psychosocial symptoms.
Just making the dispatchers aware that this is different from a more typical acute medical problem call and then know sort of what to do with those calls that might be different from a more traditional call?
Yeah, to find out what is the correlation. And that's what we did. While the research efforts, we have series, we discovered a series of primary correlations to this extract listening method. So there was, of course, this abnormality in calls. This could be unusual seek conversation is at the forehand, insufficient description of the medical problem, or even problem description, which is corresponding more to an invitation to chat. We told it that way. Maybe frequent calls for help from concerning the same individual. So, of course, there is a lot of more, but it's about looking into the calls more intense. It's not ready yet. I will not say that we found out all the necessary things which allows having the full picture. So that was a starting point we did. And at the end, there should be the goal to have a more sustainable system in looking into that.
So before we go, I'd like to just ask you one more question, which is, in an era of increasing caller and patient diversity to almost all emergency communication centers, especially in the US and Europe, what can we do to better serve all the people who call emergency communications?
I would recommend, it's really hard, this question, but it's a really good question. What we can do is do better the service for the diverse callers, diverse problems which we get asked for, is, of course, to focus on a more general health perspective than we do it now. Of course, the medical symptoms or the medical treatment will be the priority. Of course, we are the emergency numbers. We are driving emergency comm centers. We are working in emergency centers. But as we said before, the reason why the public, the humans are calling the numbers which we are serving are not always medical, police, or fire, or even handled by a nurse line. They are so tremendous baseline sometimes. It's basic needs sometimes they are calling for, or they are in the background of their calls. So I would like to recommend to come back maybe from a very specialized system or from very specialized systems and tools to having an ear to listen to the caller as well. Caller interrogation is the profession, and listening to the caller in terms of having more a broader view to their needs, this should be maybe a development for the future.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you for being with us today.
I thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dispatch In Depth. Remember, it really helps us if you rate and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcasts. Dispatch In Depth is hosted by me, Isabel Gardette. Our producer is Becca Barris. Reading Roberts is the technical director, and Scott Robinson is our executive producer.